What is it they say about better late than never and so on? I just posted the fact that we're live tonight because it's been kind of busy. I'm Rick Moore along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, and this is North Shore Sports Night. And Coach, welcome. How are you?
I'm good, Rick. That's I'm here.
Where are you? Never mind. Don't answer that. All right, tonight we're going to start off with Revere High School football coach Lou Ciccatelli because football is still underway. We have a massive amount of high school coaches and interviews lined up for this week into the spring season, but we still want to deal with football, of course, and Coach Ciccatelli has been so good to us over the years that I want to maintain that while they're playing a four-game schedule. And they're 2-0 now as Coach Lou has won his first two games. We'll talk to him in just a few minutes. Also be checking in with our sports writers, Gary Larrabee and Mike Grenier, of course, as we go on. And we'll talk about some other stuff. And, Coach, we got a few minutes here to chat, you know, off the cuff, you and I. What comes to your mind in the world of sports, either local or Boston-wise or otherwise?
Well, it looks like the all the doom and gloom naysayers will have to sort of take a back seat for a little bit. The page is graded out very high in their draft. They got nothing lower than a B plus. They have four A's and A plus. So the pundits all think that they did very, very well in terms of the people that they drafted. Everybody is still screaming that they need a wide receiver, but they signed free agents in the offseason, and Belichick obviously thinks that he has enough in hand right now to make a difference from last year. It's going to be interesting. We got, you know, they got the quarterback that I really wanted them to get, the pocket passer, you know, Mack Wood out of Alabama. They got his teammate, the defensive lineman, who was the number one rated defensive tackle in the draft that fell to 38. It's going to be interesting. Very, very interesting. They got some high motor, high quality personnel to work with, and we'll see what happens. The Celtics are still a nightmare and a pleasant dream from day to day. You never know who's going to show up for them. Bruins are steady. New England Revolution, you know, 2-0 to start the season. They played a fabulous match the other night. I watched the entire game, and they were impressive. The level of play that they exhibited was really, really solid. So hopefully they'll definitely maintain that, get back to their ways of around 2004, 2005, when they were in the league final every year. You know, high school sports, going to be getting some Northeast Conference coaches interviews this week, and we'll get those up and posted. So there is a lot going on all different levels, and we'll see where it goes.
Absolutely. We'll be talking, we've got some interviews in the can already. Jonathan Zaluki is the boys lacrosse coach at Danvers High School, first year coach, and we'll be talking with him this week. We'll also check in with Mike Giardi, who is, he's a Hall of Famer in about 25 different sports in 25 different places. Did you know that, Coach?
I didn't know that many, but, Mike has certainly earned the accolades, and as Duke about to mention, he received another one, this past weekend.
What was that one? I missed it.
That's what I thought you were referring to. I believe it's a broadcast one, a broadcast award.
Okay. No, I didn't know that. And I talked with him, this evening. We'll have that interview posted tomorrow. And, he's so enthused. I think the big thing that is so impressive, Tim, about educators / coaches right now, is to every single, to I was going to say to a man, but to a man and a woman, to every single coach I've talked with, they have been so effusive in their praise of the student athlete and how he and she has handled this situation. And it has involved, each of them has talked about a growth experience with the kids and their understanding and their resilience, their maturity, and their, I guess, compassion for, what's going on right now to do the right thing. And, that's really so exciting. You and I are educators. And with what everybody has been through, with all the down stuff that's gone on the last 4 years plus, it's really encouraging to see, to hear, and to listen to.
Oh, you know, yeah, you're talking about Coach Giannotti. I was thinking about the sportscaster, Mike Giannotti from NECN.
Oh, no, I'm talking about Marbleheads, Mike Giardi.
Okay.
No. Coach Giardi coaches a math teacher. He coaches every season. You know, he played at Harvard. He's a baseball star. Played in the majors, I believe. Plays football. Just an amazing man. And he just loves working with these kids. And he, like every single coach we've talked with, Tim, they're so impressed with the way these kids have handled this.
Yeah, well, you know, it takes a special kind of person to do it. That's for sure.
All right, let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll check in with keep my fingers crossed here, Revere High School football coach Lou Ciccatelli, and we'll go from there. This is MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. Bill Newell will be setting up shop with the Salem News Sports Writers on Tuesday now, and I think that'll be posted on Wednesday. So much going on during the weekend. You gotta, if you haven't seen that program, you have to watch it. It's the Salem News Sports Writers podcast, all the Salem News sports writers, plus the Gloucester Times sports editor, and they talk with Bill every week, and I can't believe how many kids' names they get out there, and they know the kids, they know what the kids' attributes are, the statistics and so on. You gotta watch this program. Alright, let's take a break, and let's see here if I can find the right buttons to push. We'll be back in a little while. Which means a real little while. Hang in there.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention is working to help keep you and your community safe from the threat of novel or new coronavirus. Take the following everyday steps to help avoid the spread of all respiratory viruses. Wash your hands often with soap and water for at least 20 seconds. Cover your cough or sneeze with a tissue. Throw the tissue away and then wash your hands. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects or surfaces, such as remote controls and doorknobs. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. And stay home if you are sick. Call your healthcare provider if you develop fever, cough, or difficulty breathing. For more tips, visit cdc.gov.
Alrighty then, I managed to push all the right buttons and keys, and Revere High School football coach Lou Ciccatelli is on board right now, along with Tim Kearns. And coach, we talked on Saturday, but we want to revisit that game, and congratulations, you guys are now 2-0.
Yep, 2-0, off to a good start, played very well. I think both teams played very well, and we were just fortunate enough. We had five straight possessions in the game that resulted in touchdowns and two-point conversions, and we were kind of able to pull away there. And we held on and finished strong at the end, and we'll take 2-0 going into Everett and see where it goes.
All right, let's talk about the Lynn English game, Coach, and then I know Tim's going to be picking your brain as well. But, you're talking, 50, 60 points in that game, a lot of offense for any fans who might have been watching it. Tell me a little bit about the offense that you guys put up.
Yeah, well, we did a lot of damage. Our two running backs, Billy Ginepra had 144 yards and a touchdown, two-point conversion. Adetayo Adetebi had 154 yards, two touchdowns. So right there alone on the ground, you're looking at close to 300 yards rushing the football, which it was so windy probably one of the windiest games I'd ever seen in my career.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there were, at times, it was like 24 mile per hour winds, and Calvin was still able to throw the football. He hit Dylan Day for a nice 60-yard pass down the middle to set up another drive, and he had a few little outs and whatnot, and he did a lot of damage with his feet early on in the first quarter, which really, I think, got the offense going. You know, it was close. It was, we didn't score until like, we scored in the first drive, but it was a long drive, and Calvin kept the drives going with, two rushing fourth down conversions.
Mm.
And I think from that point, he was making things happen. The running game opened, the pass game opened, and, you know, the offensive line clicked, and we were off to the races.
I know Tim's there somewhere.
Oh, well, I thought you were going to continue with it. Coach, most of Calvin's passes just quick outs because of the wind. You wanted to shorten the amount of field he had to throw across, and that would enable him really to keep a tight spiral on the ball and be much more accurate with his throwing.
Yeah, there was no doubt. We were throwing a lot of slants and outs and stuff like that, hitches, some curls, you know, expand the curl zone a little bit there. But, yeah, it had to be short balls. He did throw a nice rope down, like I said, to Dylan Day. But it was tough throwing the football. And I'll tell you, the quarterback for English had a cannon. I mean, we watched this kid. He has a very, very strong arm. And you could see a couple of times he was throwing the ball to the sideline, you know, some drags and whatnot, a little deep, 12 to 15 yards, and the wind just took it away. So we were just trying to take whatever we could just to keep the defense off kilter a little bit.
Now, with the kids, obviously the blocking assignments were executed extremely well. So a lot of kudos go to that offensive line that you made us put together there.
Yeah, they did a great job. You know, I'm going to mention them all because they played a great, great football game. Dominic Reed, Max Doucette, Ryan Doucette, his brother, Alamadi Alcudi, it was his first game playing a varsity start. Josimar Martinez and Dylan Day. Listen, they were getting a good push up front against a very, very big, the biggest defensive line we've seen in a while from Lynn English. And, you know, the tailbacks were able to bust through and get some big yards. And anytime you can carry the football, you know, as a team and come up with close to 300 yards rushing, it's a good night. It's a good night, and that's exactly what we did.
You know, one of the things that Paul Ingram always talked about, because he had such great success running the wing T, and you look at some of the linemen and you go, how did you do that with kids that size? And Paul always talked about the importance of good technique, of executing the technique, especially the zone blocking that they would use, that, you know, you're not going to block the guy directly in front of you. You're going to take the guy to your right, to your left. You're going to hit him, you know, on the thigh. You want to turn him, and that's all you need. If your running backs are where they're supposed to be, all that lineman has to do, no matter how big the other kid is simply get him to turn and create a gap, and those running backs will exploit it. And that's why the wing for Paul was so successful. I remember for a number of years, his interior guys were like 5'10", 170.
Yeah.
But they were just marked up kids.
Yeah, and they learned from one of the best. I learned from Paul a little bit. I used to have coffee with Paul, believe it or not. I'd meet him down at Marty's Donuts in Ipswich and pick his brain, because who ran the wing T better than Paul? No one. And I've been running it's the truth. And I've been running the wing T for a long, long time. That's what I learned. That's what I did. We've incorporated some RPO stuff on it, but it's still the wing T. All the blocking is still the same, and you're right. It's all about giving little kids a chance, and it's all about angles. Angles? Right,
angles. That's what Paul would say, yeah. Angles, yeah. And you know, Lou, Kevin Fassett, I just talked with him last week. very successful high school coach at Ipswich High School before he decided to leave this year. He I don't know, probably between Coach Fassett and Coach Ingram, I'm not going to mention how many years difference there is, but there's a big year, a lot of difference in years. And Coach Fassett was saying that he was picking Coach Ingram's brain as well. So you guys are in a pretty good fraternity, even though you compete against one another. You still learn from each other.
Oh, big time! I love the NEC was great. But when Paul was there, Paul's a great guy. I love Paul. Much respect for him. You know, and I would sit down with him anytime I had a chance. I had some of his videos that I would look at too.
Yep.
I mean, the guy, very. Very successful, and it's an offense that I loved, and I try to evolve it with high school since I've been there a long time. And yeah, I mean, it gives your kids a chance, the Wing T, and the camaraderie between, you know, you say that, it's funny, everybody respected everybody in the NEC when we were there. The NEC was a great league. I mean, I don't think there are any coaches that disliked anybody, and I'm sure it's going to be the same way in the GBL.
Mm-hmm.
At least I hope so.
Well, yeah, you guys are on a mission, and Coach Kearns will, he's part of it too. You guys, you're educators, you're surrogate fathers, for heaven's sakes, and you love the sport and you're competitors, and you have to, relay that to the kids, and you lift them up. And so, each of you knows that, and even if you don't, even if you compete on the field and you got different levels of talent and so on, you're each doing that, and Tim, you know what I'm trying to say here. It's a matter of working with the kids and just making them compete and learn as best as you can teach them. You know what I'm saying, Tim?
Yeah, and it's one of the side jobs. You don't go into coaching thinking about. It's just along the way situations are going to arise where you're going to have to be an advisor, a comforter. A redirector sometimes, got to be a shoulder. Sometimes you got to be stern with the kids to have them understand. And I know Lou has had to deal with this in his career as well, because the kids have to know that there are penalties to be paid for bad decisions, and it doesn't have to ruin one's life, but it does affect the immediate future at times.
Yeah. Yeah, and the thing with the Wing T too, and everybody that's running it, I have my, for example, my offensive coordinator, Paul Norton, he's just done a tremendous job for me the last 2 years. And I'll be honest with you, it's all Wing T, but he added the RPO stuff to it too. We went to a lot of different workshops, we all did, and we were sold on it because the Wing T actually fits perfectly with the RPOs. It's just the way it evolved. And I think if Paul was still coaching, I'm sure he'd have some of that in there for sure. No question in my mind.
Well, I was just going to say, Lou, back in the day when Paul was an assistant coach, he was a quarterback out in Springfield, and he worked with all the kids at quarterback. And he, for year after year, whether it was Danvers or Beverly, wherever he was, he worked with the kids passing, and they always had the best passing quarterback. So you're right. You guys have to adapt, don't you? I mean, you gotta figure out what the times are, what your talent is, and then you gotta see, how much you can get out of these guys. And certainly, Lou, you gotta feel good about this class that you have right now this year. And tell me a little bit more about these kids and how they're meshing together.
Yeah, they are. They're a real special group. I can say that. I mean, we got, like I said, we had 20 seniors coming back this year, and they felt like 10-1. We had a great season. We won the NEC, but we went to Melrose. We got it handed to us, and they feel like they still need some closure. And I think I know I do, and I know some of the coaches do too. I mean, you always stay hungry, and these kids are a hungry bunch. They put a lot of work in on their own during COVID in the weight room. They're all very close to each other, which I preach. I think it's 80% of it. I mean, any good football coach will tell you that. It's about building relationships with each other and just working hard together. My quarterback, Calvin Boudreau, he's coming into his own. He makes things happen. He can throw the football. He's also very mobile now. He got faster from last year. And, a lot of that is just working hard. in the offseason, like all those kids did, the offensive line. We lost three starters last year from the offensive line. But some of these kids that filled in, it almost feels like we haven't missed a beat. You know, I mentioned all that. In my running backs, you know, Billy Ginepra, Adateo, Mark Galvez, another big player that we have this year. And then, of course, you know, some guys on defense, you know, that have really come on their own. John Tron, another three-year starter linebacker. You know, these guys, my two defensive ends, Ken Ventura and Augusto Gonzalez. You know, they both started last year. So it's good to have some of those guys back, and it does make a difference. And they're definitely on a mission, and they want to finish.
Well, I'm going to give Tim the final question here in 1 second, but there's no disgrace in losing to Melrose. They've slapped the NEC around a couple of times, just like Tewksbury has. So, you know, that happens. But, Coach, you got the big one coming up. So tell us about this game coming up this week, where it's going to be, you know, and your assessment of them. And then I'll let Tim finish it up with you guys.
Sure. So the game's in Everett. It's at 6 o'clock, Everett Stadium, Friday night. It's basically for the GBL championship. You know, when you do the math, this is the game. This is it. So it's a lot. Again, it was one of our early goals this year. We wanted, like every team, especially with COVID, you want to win your conference. So I mean, that alone is really, really important to us. And we're gonna have our work cut off for us, no doubt. They are a very, very good, talented, big, fast football team. You know, we've only had one film on them, and you know, we've broken it down as much as possible. We still got more things to do with it, but I can tell you this: the speed alone is scary. You know, they got some speed. They come hard every play, and their secondary is probably one of the best secondaries I've seen in a while. They got a couple of kids that are going D1.
Oh my!
Kids going to BC, and I want to say Wake Forest, and you know. But at the end of the day, you know, what I've been telling my kids too is, you know, I think we're going to be okay if we match up well with them. I think we can score on anybody. And you know, my message to the kids is simply, they're men just like you and I, and they put their pants on every morning just like you and I. So guess what? It comes down to who wants it more that night, and we'll be ready. They'll be ready, and we'll see where it goes.
Yeah, Coach. I was thinking about this this matchup, and you know, I'm sure there was a lot of speculation around the GBL and some other leagues that, you know, Johnny DiBiase leaves and goes to CM, and you know, with him would go the Everett mystique, the Everett dominance. But his assistant has stepped in and kept the ship on its course, and you know, it feeds into the kids, not so much. A lot of times it is the coach and the way that he projects. But the kids who have come from behind, like your kids who got time during the last season to get repetitions, to get rep, and they saw the team's success and they saw what hard work got them, they get inspired by seeing that, and they don't want to be the ones that caused the train not to get out of the station and get to the next destination. And I think that's what drives a team like yours, and it's what's driven Everett for so many years. And I think it's going to be a great game. I'm going to be there Friday night. So.
Well, I personally think it's going to be one of the games of the year, in my opinion. You know, so, yeah, like I said, the boys are looking forward to it. And you're right, this is a chance for some of these kids last year that played, you know, a lot, and some that played a little, to step up and, like you said, keep the train going and going in the right direction.
Lou, we appreciate it. Going to check in with you this weekend, man, or next Monday, whatever. But best of luck this week. Stay safe, stay healthy. And thank you for all that you do for us, man. We really appreciate it.
Oh, always a pleasure, and thank you, guys.
All right, Coach, take care.
Appreciate it.
All right, buddy.
Take care, guys.
All right, that's Lou Ciccatelli, who is the Revere High School football coach, and they got a big one coming up on Friday night at Everett. And Tim, I got to tell you, when Bill Newell and I first started broadcasting at WESX, and way back, okay, we used to broadcast Beverly. The Beverly Everett game. Beverly would go over to play at Everett, or Peabody, I believe it was, either one. And Everett never won a game. It was always the NEC or the other GBL school. But since then, forget about it. Oh my goodness. What a wagon.
Yeah, they have been, and this should be, again, a very entertaining game. Hopefully, I don't know how many people are going to be allowed into the stadium on Friday night. We're going to hope that the weather is good, and that allows both teams to operate in peak mode. So I'm just going to take it's partly sunny for the weather. We're doing a weather recap. It's going to be partly sunny. It's going to be 49 degrees throughout game time. It should be good.
All right.
Good weather and good conditions, and hope it's going to be a good game.
Thank you, Tim Al Roker Kearns. We'll be right back.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
All right, we're back now with sports historian and golf writer Gary Larrabee. Hello, Gary. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Rick. I hope you are, too.
I am. I don't know about currency. You know what? I forgot to ask about the Derby, man. Lou Ciccatelli, I talked to Lou over the weekend after his game Friday night, and he was he was telling me who his favorite was in the Derby, and I forgot who it was. So, start with you, Gary.
Both of his favorites did not win.
What's that?
Neither of his favorites won.
Neither of Lou's favorites? Okay. Gary, how'd you make out?
We turned it on early, and we saw that fantastic preliminary race that ended in a dead heat.
Mm-hmm. Wow. I didn't see that.
That was a terrific race. That was just a preliminary. And then the main event was almost a dead heat, too. It was another terrific race, and... But I leave the horses to guys like Bob Baffert, who knows what he's doing. I don't know which end of a horse you're riding. which park. Anyways, interesting that you brought it up.
All right. Let's get to the main event. And I'll let you guys take it from here. Gary, what you got?
Well, I think it's been a bittersweet stretch of time to talk about a few of our favorite golf people from around here. And I think, Tim, we have to start with poor Keegan Bradley. We thought he was going to get his first victory in like 3 years yesterday at the PGA Tour event down in Florida, the Valspar's Championship, and he was tied for the lead, almost leading the tournament almost all weekend, and then of course he gets into a two-way battle with Sam Burns, no relation to George Burns, either the golfer or the former entertainer. 24 years old, he's been leading. He's led several PGA Tour events the last couple of years. Never could finish the job, but he finished the job yesterday. Maybe only because Keegan Bradley gave it to him after Keegan put his tee shot in a par 3 13th in the water. They were tied at that point, and after that, it was all Sam Burns. Keegan finished second, made a nice check, but that was a little bit of a heartbreak that our Massachusetts boy, Vermont boy, our New Englander. Didn't come through. What did you think of it, Tim?
Well, unfortunately, those are the things that happened. But I thought his quote was interesting. He said that I don't have to play my best golf, and I think having done that, he he just relaxed and allowed himself to play better golf. You know, and, you know, did Keegan put too much pressure on himself, you know, on that backside as he sort of gave it away, and trying not to give it away, he made mistakes that ended up doing it.
Yeah, I don't think it was a pressure situation. He's won the PGA Championship. He's won two other, three other events. He's made a lot of money. He's very well off financially, but, you know, I think he wants to make the Ryder Cup team this year, and he's not there right now, but a victory, yes, he would have gotten him started in that direction, but he kind of tried to feather that high 8-iron, I believe, on the par 3 13th. He kind of didn't quite make it. He just barely hit in the water before it would have cleared the water and either bounced on the grass or landed in that trap in front of the green.
Right.
But that was the end of the whole thing for Keegan, unfortunately. But that was a little bit of a heartbreak. Two other little bit of a heartbreak type stories. Not more a question of golf gives and golf takes away. One involving Kirk Hannifeld that we talked about a little bit last week, the former director of golf and director of instruction at Salem Country Club, still a North Shore favorite of many. And he had a great week playing in the National Club Pro Championship down in Florida. He's 64, guys. He turned 65 in 3 weeks. And he finished 60th out of 312 players. He was the oldest player to make the 36-hole cut, which means he was also the oldest player to make the 54-hole cut. They have two cuts in this tournament because there were so many players. 312, you got that number, guys?
Yep.
And he had three solid rounds, 72, 73, 73, in great shape to have a great finish. And he made a double bogey and a triple bogey the final round, shot 78 and his 60th. Nonetheless, he was the only player, guys, among 12 players to take part in this tournament from the New England PGA section. He was the only player to make the cut. As I've been saying, he's had an extraordinary career. And of course, he had a terrific tournament down there. Especially since he hadn't competed since he had that back problem at the over 50 National Club Pro Championship back in the fall, in October. Keep in mind, guys, this tournament that he just finished up in, these are club pros of all ages. And the average age was like 42,
mm-hmm.
which would still make Kirk a father of most of those players.
Mm-hmm.
He could be a grandfather of a lot of the players. So anyway, so a great tip of the hat to Kirk Hannifeld. We'll be seeing him up here. He'll be playing in the Mass Open at Oak Hill, and he'll be trying to qualify for the U.S. Senior Open at Thorny Lee. But he's gone back, stayed in Florida. The tournament was in Port St. Lucie, where he lives. So it was a very convenient week if you commute. But congratulations to Kirk Hannifeld, despite a bit of a frustrating and a disappointing fourth and final round. The same thing refers to Chris Francoeur, who's our terrific local amateur from Amesbury. He's just finishing up his 4 years at the University of Rhode Island, and he had a terrific tournament playing in the Atlantic 10 Championship over the weekend down in Florida at the Reunion Resort. Chris, former St. John's Prep, a member at Amesbury Country Club, had a great summer last year playing golf around here. He shot 71-68. With a position to win the individual title at the Atlantic 10 Championship, and then he slips to a 76 the last day. The golf gods got to him a little bit, and he still finished tied for third. So, in all three cases, guys, some wonderful showings, and then a little bit of a frustrating finish for all of them.
Gary, I just saw an interesting story on ESPN golf section. Mickelson missed the cut. He's worried about a lack of focus. And he said he's struggling to maintain focus on the golf course, which has kept him in a prolonged slump. And further down, it talks about he's undecided of whether or not to take a special exemption to play in the U.S. Open.
Yeah, I don't know how much of it's mind games or if it's just bullshitting, pardon my language, just snowing over the media, but that's the way Mickelson's talking. I saw those quotes, and he's 50. He doesn't want to admit he's 50. Even though he's played in a couple of Champions Tour events and won a couple, I think already, he has to decide whether he wants to play the regular tour, where there's a lot more money, he doesn't need any more money, though, as you guys can imagine, after winning three Masters and everything else. But that's how these players play mind games with themselves, with the media. I don't know what to say about that, Tim, but I'm sure we'll be seeing Mickelson playing some more over the next few months, whether it's on the Champions Tour or on the regular tour.
You know, is it a way, and you know, athletes do this, and people do it all the time, a way of, you know, speaking out, rationalizing to himself, you know, I really don't have it like I used to have it on the tour, and maybe it's time just to flip up and go play with the old men.
Yeah, well, I think he is playing a little bit of mind games with himself, and there's a lot of psychological barriers for these guys who are playing in the big-time golf. And in his case, he's got several issues to deal with. You know, 50 years of age, and which way do I go? Do I want to keep competing? I'm sure he'll keep competing. He loves the money. He loves the competition. Loves the adulation. Loves the attention. But we'll have to wait and see where he goes from here the rest of the season. Long ways to go.
What's next, Gary? I'm sorry, Tim. Go ahead.
It's rather strange that a golfer of Mickelson's standing would come out and say something like that. Yeah, he hasn't won, and he struggles. Some weeks he's competitive, but most he's really not. He's back in the crowd. But to, you know, actually come out and say something like that, you know, question his focus. Is it more just simply he's trying to cover for the physical limitations he's finding himself under now?
Who knows? It's psychology 101 for the PGA Tour, and it covers a lot of ground. But like I said, we'll see where he goes from here, and he's got all kinds of options. He's got all the money he needs, and we'll see what he does to make himself happy competing from here on in. One last mention, guys. Rob Oppenheim from Salem, born in Salem and grew up in Andover, and he missed the cut last weekend at the Valspar Championship, and he'll be off this week. He will not be playing in the Wells Fargo down in Charlotte, and he's struggling a little bit, so we'll see where it all goes.
All right. Thanks for keeping up with those local guys. That's huge. And what's next, Gary, either on the national scene or in your column for the Salem News?
I'm going to write about Kirk Hinnefeld, who's extraordinary the way he can fight off Father Time, as they say before. He turned 65 on May 24th, and he's still able to compete with the young guys. They may all hit it 30, 40, 50 yards past him, he says, but as long as I still have a strong iron game and a strong game around the greens and on the greens, I'll keep competing as well as I can. So I'll be writing about Kirk this week in the Salem News, and don't forget, next Monday, Tuesday, Tim, our first really big statewide event, when all the best amateurs in Massachusetts will be competing in the two-man Massachusetts four-ball at Turner Hill and Ipswich Country Club next Monday and Tuesday. Looking forward to that.
Yes, I enjoy the team concept out there. The big guys played a couple of weeks ago. Can you go and watch that tournament, Gary? Can you get on the course?
I think you get a check with the pro shop, the pro shops, and or check on the massgolf.org website to see what kind of protocol they're going to have for spectators able to watch that. These are all terrific, a lot of terrific players. It's fun to watch the amateurs too, not just the pros.
Yeah.
All right, Gareth, thank you so much. There's no holiday next week, so hopefully we'll do this again on Monday.
Let's look forward to it, guys. Stay well and stay happy.
Same to you,
Gareth.
Take care and thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, that's Gary Larrabee, who is a golf writer and sports historian, and damn, he just keeps up with all of it. I don't understand. Whoa. All right, anyway, Tim and I are going to come back and talk some basketball, some pro basketball with Mike Grenier, who will straighten it out and talk me off the ledge with the Celtics and probably give us an update on the other locals who are in the NBA and so on. So we'll take a break. This is North Shore Sports Night. I'm Rick Moore, along with our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, and, of course, Tim Kearns, who is our ambassador of goodwill and our sports analysis, sports analyst extraordinaire. We will take this break and come back with more conversation. Stay with us.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right, we're back now with Mike Grenier, another sports writer extraordinaire. And, Mike, welcome back to MSO. We got Tim on the other line. And I'm going to start this thing and then I'll let you guys go at it by saying how frustrating and maddening it is to watch the Celtics.
You know, it's funny, just before you called, Rick, I was thinking, Tim, I think you'd probably agree, of the Brad Stevens teams, this is the most perplexing, puzzling team he's had, because when he took over, they were in a bad shape, bad way, and he improved them every year, and then all of a sudden they were contenders to win the Eastern Conference Championship. But this year has been so up and down, totally unpredictable. You can't figure out what they're going to do from game to game, and this last, these last two games have been a microcosm of what I'm saying, because the other night, Friday night, when Jason Tatum scored 60, they were down 29. They were down 32, actually, but they were down 29 at halftime, and it became the second-largest comeback in NBA history with a really tremendous effort they had to put in to win that game, and Tatum tying Larry Bird's 36-year-old record with 60 points. And then they play the Portland Trail Blazers, a very good team in the Western Conference, on Sunday night, and they hit the skids again. Uninspired, they get up 130-something points. The defense wasn't there, and so it leaves them with 6-7 games left in the regular season and just 3 games over 500.
Yeah, I was thinking the exact same thing as I thought what we would be discussing tonight, and it's the Jekyll and Hyde show.
Yeah.
And I don't know why Brad Stevens, as experienced as he is now, hasn't been able to put a finger on just what the cause is. Have they simply run into an ego problem with Tatum and Brown, and one of these guys may have to leave town in order to find some semblance of balance on the team?
Yeah.
Is it that the bench, as currently constituted, is just here today, gone tomorrow for them?
Well, yeah, I mean, the bench, Tim, is the 30th ranked bench in the NBA for scoring. So that tells you a lot about what Brad Stevens is facing, because you can't, you know, when you look at the middle of the season, the rotation guys, meaning the 6th, 7th, and 8th players, might be totally different than the rotation guys 2 weeks later and the rotation guys from the last 3 or 4 nights. So you don't know what to expect. And from the starter's point of view, Marcus Smart has been, the last few games, I don't know if, I think some of it must be frustration, but he's been extremely disappointing in key games that they need to win. He got himself suspended for using abusive and threatening language, as it was described, to an official. And then he gets himself ejected from the Portland game last night, and a possible, I mean, I haven't seen any talk of it today, but a possible one-game suspension for hitting Nurkic, the big center for Portland, in the groin area on purpose, deliberately. That's why he picked up a technical foul and got ejected. So I'm disappointed in him. He should be one of the leaders. He knows better. I think he obviously loves to win. We know that. We know he makes the extra effort, but that frustration is boiling over, and he's crossing the line between playing hard and playing cheap.
Yeah, it's the weirdest thing. And even Mike Gorman, the broadcast has lost it.
Yeah.
And these guys have to be the modicum of composure.
Yeah.
You know, and he certainly has over his time doing this out, because he always had Tommy Hines there to go ballistic for him. But what was it, last week, the week before that, he just lost it commenting on the game, the way they were playing?
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, it's so frustrating because, like I said, they play well one game and not so well the next. And to see him last night, at one point last night, they were shooting 62% on threes, the Celtics were, and they were losing. And why is that? Because they weren't complementing that offense.
No defense. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. No defense, at least not enough good defense. Portland was hitting long-range shots, but they were uncontested long-range shots. The Celtics are just kind of like trying to win the easy way without putting out the extra effort. And, you know, we talk about that bench, and you mentioned it right off the bat. It's a good point. And, you know, now all of a sudden, a guy that Brad Stevens didn't use much all year, the number one pick, Aaron Nesmith, has had two or three 16-point games, and he's playing well. And then Grant Williams, who was playing well for a while, doesn't see any time whatsoever because he's been so inconsistent. And Romeo Langford, who Danny Ainge loves, I don't know who else in the NBA might love Romeo Langford. I don't think we on the North Shore media contingent, like, I certainly haven't seen anything from him in 2 years that leads me to believe he's going to be a better-than-average player or just a below-average player. I mean, he's shooting 31%, 26% on threes, and he's playing non-productive minutes. He'll be out there for 16, 17 minutes at times, and you look at his box score, and he's got like 3 or 4 points, a rebound, one assist. They're non-productive minutes.
Yeah, Mike, I want to ask you about we talk about a lot, chemistry and so on, but I think Tim and you nailed it with the bench problem. I mean, that's gigantic and that's real and that has not been overcome in the last several years and it's not going to be this year. But the two genuine bona fide superstars in the making, with Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. When Jason Tatum came out of, was it Duke?
Yes.
I was so impressed with his maturity when he was 19.
Right.
I'm not impressed with his maturity now. And I am impressed with Jaylen Brown's maturity. How do you look at that in terms of, you know, when I talk about maturity, I'm talking about presence. I'm talking about, talking to the media. I'm talking about working with each other. Once in a while, it seems like, Jason Tatum gets the whole package and he knows when to dish it off, when to shoot.
Yeah.
But Jaylen Brown seems to me to be a little bit more advanced. How do you look at those two guys?
Yeah, I agree. He's more advanced. He's a little bit like, what, just a year older, but I think, he's more mature, you know, in terms of the way he's built his game and built his skills and building his skills at an NBA level, he's more mature. Jason Tatum has more natural talent, I believe. Tatum, as we saw the other night, sometimes I think we expect a little too much of Tatum because he had a 53-point game earlier this year. And the other night, I mean, he scored 60 and it almost looked effortless, the shots he made. And, of course, we love Larry Bird. My wife and I were watching the game, and I'm going, please don't break Larry Bird's record. and, you know, when he had 58, and he actually got fouled from behind, he really was in the act of shooting. He made the basket and should have been awarded the free throw to make it 61. But I said to myself, thank goodness for the officials for getting it wrong, because I didn't want it to break Larry Bird's record. Of course, Larry Bird did it in a regulation game. He didn't need an overtime to get to 60. But what Tatum did the other night was just out of this world stupendous, because obviously the Spurs knew he was going to be taking all the key shots, and he was facing some double and triple teams, and he was hitting those shots. But to get back to your point, Rick, about him being immature, I think he gets more frustrated than Jaylen Brown when things aren't going right. His body language speaks more on the court. You can see it on the court better than when Jaylen Brown might be down about things. You know, so I think that's why he gets criticized, and legitimately so, when things aren't going right. But, you know, we have to understand that he's still only 23 years old.
Right, right.
And you're asking a lot of him to be the face of the franchise and the leader. And when I think, in actuality, he's more comfortable when both he and Jaylen Brown are the so-called faces of the franchise and leaders. And that's where Marcus Smart also has to come in. He has to be smarter in what he's been doing. Then like, he can't get thrown out of games where there's only 6-7 games left. They're in the number 7 seed spot right now, which means they would not be facing one of the top 3 teams in the first round of the playoff. They would have a one-game playoff, possibly with the Washington Wizards, who are the hottest team in the NBA. You don't want to be in that position. So they have a favorable schedule these last six, seven games. They play, you know, in Orlando Wednesday night. They have the Bulls, who don't have a good record. But they do have two games with the Heat, who are just a game or two ahead of them. They are not going to catch the New York Knicks, who are in the fourth spot right now, which constitutes a home court advantage in the first round of the playoffs.
Well, I hope I'm wrong, and I'll leave it with you guys. But I don't see the defensive intensity and commitment for them to go anywhere.
No, I agree. And I don't think you can turn that on. It's not like a flashlight. You can't turn that off and on. If you haven't played defense all year, and you've played half-hearted defense all year, you are going to play half-hearted defense in the playoffs. Hmm. You just don't turn it on and become a great defensive team once the bell rings for the playoffs. It just doesn't happen. Tim, do you think that too?
Yeah, I agree, Mike. I mentioned last thing. I've watched the 86 Celtics film.
Yeah.
It's just so entertaining to watch because they were so good. But they were talking to Bill Walton after a loss.
Yeah.
He said, you know, we can't think that we can just go out there and throw the ball in the court and win the game.
Yeah.
We have to work at it because everybody's coming after us. And here's
right.
a guy that's already won a world championship. You know, he's got a champion in college and in the NBA, one of the greatest players in league history. And he's saying, you know, we have to play hard. It
right.
wasn't an expectation that because I'm Bill Walton, everyone's going to get out of my way.
Right, yeah. right. And, you know, they don't have to go back too far to see some more recent film of Kevin Garnett and what he represented on defense for the Celtics when they won it all in 2008. He instilled fear
mm-hmm.
in his teammates
that
if they did not play with an intensity that he
That's
played
right.
with, well, no one could match his intensity. But if they didn't commit themselves with intensity to play defense.
Great point.
You know, and you know, that was a great team because Paul Pierce bought into what Garnett brought to the table when he came from the Minnesota Timberwolves. And that was a key because he was such a great offensive player. But Paul Pierce played very hard on defense against LeBron James in those great playoff series. And they won the championship because they had some great role players. They had Eddie House coming off the bench hitting threes. But that team played defense, and Garnett was definitely the centerpiece of that outfit. And Rondo could play defense in those days, and he piled up triple-doubles. You know, it was a really great all-around team. And, you know, they just don't have that sort of cohesion now. And, Rick, the word you use, chemistry, is just not apparent. Sometimes it's apparent from game to game. And we haven't mentioned Kemba Walker yet. He's missed the last five or six games. He's been in and out of that lineup. And I don't know if it's unlucky this year because obviously they've been resting him in back-to-back games with a knee problem. And we don't know if that's chronic, if it's going to continue next year. And now he had the oblique calf strain and a side strain. And he hasn't played the last five games. And we don't know what his status is for the rest of the season here.
Yeah, and I just want to say, to pick up on Tim's point and your point with Kevin Garnett, I do remember Robert Parrish. Mike Lynch would interview him after every game on Channel 5, and he invariably would say, after every interview, we have to get better, both individually and collectively as a team. He said it every time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I loved. I used to deal with Parrish all the time, and that's the way he was. He became a great player when he came to the Celtics because he really believed in that whole Celtics dynasty thing, and he bought in, and he went three championships with Bird and McHale. So, but yeah, you just don't see that with this team right now. And maybe Jaylen Brown and Tatum need a couple more years of seasoning.
Yeah.
Where they're going to get to that point. I think we expect so much of these guys. And when you're lacking on defense as a team, you're basically asking Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum to average 30 to 35 points a game
yeah.
to win. And because their bench is so feeble and their defense has been so feeble. So, that's too much to ask. They need some help. But mostly, they need some spark from the head coach. They really do. They need someone to kick the butt, seriously.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And Brad Stevens does not have that type of personality.
You know what they need? They need Kevin Garnett.
Yeah. You know,
they need a Kevin Garnett personality type. Someone's going to go in there, who's going to get loud, who's going to get in their face. Who on that team gets in their face?
Well, Marcus Smart does it, but lately he's been his own worst enemy. But to speak to your point, if Kevin Garnett was an assistant coach this team, I think they'd have a different record right now. They'd have a completely different mindset down the stretch and going to these playoffs, and it'd be much more of a threat in the playoffs. With the talent level they have, they'd be much more of a threat if Kevin Garnett was sort of like the defensive instigator.
Well, great discussion.
No, that,
Michael. Yeah. Mike, comment on any of the other guys that we know that you follow in the NBA from locally?
Well, you know, it's still, I don't know if Mr. Tom Thibodeau is getting any consideration for Coach of the Year, but when you're talking a team that was 38 and 110 the previous two seasons, and now they're 36 and 28, he's going to win as many games this year as those previous Knicks teams did in 2 years combined. and they might, it looks like they're going to finish fourth and have home court advantage in the first round of the playoffs. And I look at that roster and I say, who scores? Julius Randle is having the best year of his career, a big guy's, you know. And then you have the second best scorer is the kid out of Duke, R.J. Barrett, who just came out a couple years ago. After that, you have to go deep onto their bench, and they have Derrick Rose, whose best days are behind him, but he'll get you 20, 25 points in particular games. And that's why they've been so good. And the other reason, of course, is that Tom Thibodeau's team, he insists on playing intense defense and good positional defense, and they've done that. And to me, they're a team that, like, they're an underdog-type team that you can root for, as much as I hate New York teams overall in the last 60 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Rick, we've seen it, right? You grew up, you know, the Philadelphia 76ers, you know, they were a hateable team.
Yeah.
Respect what they had. The Knicks were a hateable team, but when they had Walt Frazier and Earl Monroe and Jerry Lucas and Willis Reed, they won a couple of titles. They were admirable in the sense that they played like a team. Well, this Tom Thibodeau team doesn't nearly have that kind of talent. I'd say talent-wise, the Knicks might be the 20th best team in the NBA, but here they are in fourth place in the Eastern Conference.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Thibodeau, for those who don't know, was both a player and a coach at Salem State College and had a long apprenticeship as an assistant coach, and he was the architect of the Celtics defense when they won it all in 2008. And based on that is when he was hired by the Chicago Bulls because the Chicago Bulls knew he was a defensive mastermind. So he got this shot, and now he's gotten the second shot as a head coach, and he's doing very well with it.
You know, Mike, you brought up the Knicks in the 70s, and my flashback was Dave DeBuscher and Jerry Lucas.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God, you talk about toughness. Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah, those guys, they were an intelligent team. They played the game with
Bill Bradley.
Yeah, Bill Bradley. Yeah, great. Princeton, you know, yeah. Princeton University, a Rhodes Scholar, presidential candidate year 2000 as U.S. Senator from New Jersey. Yeah, one of the brightest guys that's ever played in the NBA. But they were a delight to watch.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, they were guys, of course the game was different, that who understood the ebb and flow of the game of basketball. They understood the fundamentals of basketball. They continued without and executed them.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Here's one. When I was a junior, before my junior year in high school, I went to a basketball camp. And it was Bob Pettit and Jerry Lucas.
Oh, Bob Pettit. Whoa.
Bob Pettit's a great one.
Whoa.
And I've got
and
one for you.
Cliff Hagan, Bob Pettit. All right. Selmo Beatty.
I've got one for you. Just 3 years ago, July 27, 2018, I remember the date only because it was my birthday, I was seeing Bruce Springsteen on Broadway. And who was in the audience? Bill Bradley. And I hooked up with him before the show started. And he didn't know me from anything, but I said to him, in my earliest days as a sports writer, I covered those great Knicks teams against the Celtics. And that immediately got his attention, and we talked basketball.
Oh, awesome.
A good 10 or 15 minutes.
Isn't that nice?
Before Springsteen hit the stage on Broadway. And then I had told him at that point that this was my, that was going to be my 225th Springsteen show. Okay? 225 since 1977. After the show, Bill Bradley made a beeline to my seat and shook my hand and said, "Now I understand why you've seen Bruce Springsteen 225.
Is that right?
Absolutely.
Oh, what a nice guy. That's cool.
He was a great guy, and just the fact that we could talk about those Nick days in the early 70s, I mean, I think he was like, we had a fun conversation just talking about
it. You know, and that's what's so special about this, isn't it, Mike? And
yeah, it is.
People, you know, money's one thing, and the big boys make a lot of money, but that kind of thing, man, that just makes you smile and you sleep well at night, don't you?
Yeah. I mean, it's just great experiences that we had with athletes, interacting with athletes from different eras.
Yeah.
You know?
Is there any chance you'll be getting an interview with Tom Thibodeau?
Oh my God! I can talk to Tibbs anytime. I have him on my speed dial on my cell phone.
Okay.
And yeah, I mean, I love to talk to him soon. You know, it's funny. Nick Giannino, who covers the Celtics for the Salem News,
mm-hmm.
After Tatum's 60-point game the other night, he texted me. He said, "Mike, I really miss you. You know, but because of the pandemic, I'm still, you know,
right.
Because of our age group here, guys, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm still hesitant to go into the Garden. And but Nick Giannino really wished I had been there Friday night." To partake in that 60-point game, and of course they have to talk to the players remotely. They have a Zoom session afterwards. We see that in any post game now. It's not like the reporters.
You know, I'm glad you brought up his because Nick is a worthy successor, as are Matt Williams and Phil Stacey.
Right.
They get it, and it's great to see what the Salem News is still doing.
Yeah, Nick is like the other guys. They're very very conscientious about what they do. They still, obviously, they love, you know, you guys, we do the schoolboy sports, they love doing that, and they also love doing, you know, the Bruins, the Celtics, the Red Sox, and all that, the Patriots. So, yeah, it's a nice combination of things that they do, and Nick's a real basketball enthusiast, young guy, he went to Pentucket, and, you know, he just loves talking Celtics with me, and I actually made some corrections in his story about Jason Tatum before it went to print, so... he still relies on the old head here, I guess. And,
smart man.
I appreciate the fact that he'll tap into me at times.
Smart man.
Various things.
Yeah.
It's fun. It's fun to be able to contribute that way.
Mike, we got to go.
Mike.
Yep. Great talking to you guys. And
Mike,
hopefully next week.
Hold on. Tim's got one more.
Yep.
Here's a flashback for you.
Yes.
July, I'm going to see Tom Rush.
Yep.
In the Backport Series at the Hale Farm in Beverly.
Yep.
I saw Tom Rush 50 years ago when I was a freshman at Salem State,
that's
1971.
That's unbelievable.
For the second time.
Got a better one than that.
I wonder if he'd remember you.
The Rolling Stones played Salem State in 1964, so I got a better one than that. There you go.
That's incredible. And you know what, guys? I saw, my wife and I saw, Janis Joplin twice. Once at the... casino there in Hampton
yep.
Beach, New Hampshire, Hampton Beach Casino, and once at the was now the Box Center in on Boylston Street or Tremont Street in Boston. At the time, it was called the Boston Music Hall. So yeah, Janis Joplin, and we had tickets to see Jimi Hendrix, and he passed away 4 days before
oh,
we
man.
To see him.
Oh wow!
Yeah.
Did you get a refund?
Yes, we did, because I was so ticked off. The tickets were $3.50.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Well, you know, that says it all, and it's past my bedtime, so I gotta hang up on you guys.
it's great to have these tangents that we can go on.
You know.
And we can do this because it's the Internet.
Yes.
Mike, I appreciate it. We will do this again next Monday.
That sounds great, guys. Stay healthy, you guys.
You
right?
too. Be well, Mike.
Yeah, you too.
Thank you.
Hey,
all right, that's Mike Grenier, who is still associated with the Salem News, still a great sports writer, and it's fun, isn't it, Tim? Man, all these, you know, you don't realize how much stuff is inside that head until you start shaking it out your ears when you put your head over and hit your head and try to get that stuff out.
Oh yeah, you know, and you know, one memory leads to another, you know.
Oh yeah. All right, Coach, it's been fun tonight. We'll do it again next Monday.
I'll try to be here.
Yeah, all right. Well, I'll check with you and find out where you are. All right, Coach. Be safe, man.
All right, we'll talk to you later, Rick.
Good night, Tim. All right. That's Tim Kearns, who was our Ambassador of Goodwill here at MSO. He's also our tremendous sports analyst, as you can tell. And that's it. I'm out of here. This is North Shore Sports Night. Thank you.